ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week is part two with Nick. Now, BSC, we'll continue talking about them and what they're offering. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
You touched on something. I interviewed Patty and he made a comment. I say it to my son, my poor kid. He has to hear me repeat the same thing every time before he goes to practice. Bad first touch leads to a bad pass, which leads to a turnover, which leads to a goal. Ultimately, that's what he said. And I repeat that to my son. And my son, I feel, has a good first touch and has a good brain on his head. And it's for being nine and the small things he works on and in his private lessons that he has. And it's funny listening to you say this because I feel like it's such a young age, it's not being taught. I've heard some really great coaches in my time. Landon has tried out. We've played against some really great coaches. And you listen to them talk to the players and what they're telling them. It's not telling them when to shoot or pass. It's telling them, what are you doing in the moment to be ready for the pass, like scanning. And I think that's something that is highly missing. And I feel the more I have spent time doing this, the more I pay attention to what the opposing coach is saying to their players, if they're yelling or talking, whatever it may be, if I can hear them. And A lot of times it's just joystick coaching to shoot the pass and not to really, are you scanning? Are you even in this game paying attention? It's those type of things. You mentioned it right away. You just mentioned values and curriculum, and I have it written down. I never got back to it. It goes back to your philosophy. What are your values with your club then? I mean, obviously you have them written down. Is there a process that you guys go through to encourage the values? And then with your curriculum, is it something that is written out that you said parents receive some stuff, but obviously you said with your videos you sent out, this is what we're doing and this is the videos for the next 2 weeks. Is it an ongoing curriculum, or is it a hard, I don't want to say a hard written curriculum, but an ebb and flow curriculum that's constantly changing based on.
I think you can have a hard copy of a curriculum, right? But it has to be kind of open to what that actual team is doing in that moment. So, we have, I guess, the stages of development, the stages of different ages, the stages of the competitive nature of that specific team. But like our team, what are they lacking right now in the moment? Whereas I want it to be, for example, now in the next month, I really want to work on our tactical transition from defense into attack. Well, that would have been great in theory, and that was the plan, but what have they struggled with the last month? Okay, so let's go through that first, and then we'll go on to that step two. Now make it step three, right? So I think, yeah, every club has a hard copy of what they're trying to do. I can hand that to my coaches, right? So, like with my coaches right now, the two guys who are learning, I'll send them, this is our week structure. This is by the time, like 6 o'clock we start, 6:10 we're doing this, 6:30 we're doing this, 7 o'clock we're doing this, then we wrap it up. Again, it's never going to be to the minute because, practices change, they evolve depending on what the vibe and the energy is, but it's putting that into place. So we'll have a structure as a club, we'll have structures at teams, but it's always going to change. But the values will always come down to just the player. Like, it's the player and it's the parent. Are we enjoying ourselves here? If not, why? That's a direct reflection on me. So let's, for example, we have 16 girls right now, right? Let's say June comes, July 1st, signing day for all the clubs, blah, blah, blah. If two girls decide to leave, but why are they leaving? And that's where I dig deeper into that. What have I done that hasn't helped you or got you excited about moving forward and seeing me and this club as your club? So without the kid, there is no club, and you can't be proud of something that you're producing. So that to me is the value of what we're doing. It is literally about the kid. I think if any parent or player to notice that, all they have to do is come down and watch one practice because it's intense, but there's a purpose behind it. Come watch a game. Come see how we interact with the parents and the players. It's different. It's different. And I'm not saying we're the only one. There's a lot of good coaches, like I said, who do very similar things, but it's about continuing to do that and not changing course because we're losing or we're not hitting the goals we want to do as a team, right? So we're just taking it step by step. And again, making sure the core of the club is built on the transparency that we're massive on. Because there's a lot of time and energy and commitment from the parents, as you know. It's a lot week by week, weekend by weekend. So just having them always in the loop, giving them weekly feedback. This is what we worked on this week. This is what our game should look like tomorrow. And then the feedback after the game. This is where we went right. This is what happened. This is what we need to work on next week. So again, just communication, transparency, all the stuff I think should be a given, if I'm honest. It should be just part of every club.
I know that as we get into our age group, playing time is quote earned because substitution's done differently. You aren't like my son's plays on a 2013 team. It's unlimited substitution, so some coaches literally will sub every 5 minutes because in the half, and I feel like sometimes that kills the vibe of the team, what's going on the pitch. And but playing time is very important, and you mentioned it earlier. Is why is such and such player sitting the bench? Are they happy because they're on a winning team? But is that playing time something that you can give them? And how do you develop playing time among the players then? I mean, we always have those players that are our rocks on the pitch, but how do you sub in the other? If you have 16 girls, you have five players on the bench. So how do you figure out playing time? Is it something that's try to be equal, playing equally to a degree, or is it I need this player in at this moment so they can get the time to develop, get the time in those moments to play? Or is
Yeah.
it how do you figure
Cool.
that out? Like, how do you figure that? Because I mean, I always ask is if it's the last game of the season, it means going between first place and second place in the league. Do you put in that player that hasn't played much in the game and it's a tight game just so they have an experience to play in those circumstances, even though you may lose the game by putting them in? How do you handle those type of things? Because I feel like that might be a reason a player might leave a squad because they never got a chance to go play in those high intensity games.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot working with that. I think number one, when a kid plays a few minutes on a weekend, they're on the wrong team. That's something that has to be spoken about with the parent and the player. So obviously, every team, right? So we have 60. We probably have, I call them fringe players, right? I think most of us English lads call them fringe players. They do really well. But they need to keep working and pushing themselves, right, to get to that. All right, I'm getting 25 minutes this weekend. How can we get to 35 minutes? How can I be a starter? And that's that question. I think even this group of girls aren't do that. Come talk to me. Like, these are the reasons why you didn't start today, and we'll have that open dialogue. I usually do it either on a Thursday at practice and say, "Hey, this is what I need from you today." If you really want to push for Thursday's game. So let's take our right back, for example. She's, I want you to open up the ball, play to your wing, demand it back, and let's play up the field again. Let me see you do that today because you're going to get a lot of opportunity in practice to do that. She does it, boom, she's rewarded for that. You're starting tomorrow. It doesn't matter who we're playing against. I don't look at the teams we're playing against. We have a calendar. I don't look at any of that stuff. We're playing a game of football, right? So, but in the game, I get it. I think even my coaches, when they watch, they're like, "Oh, Nick, we need to do this and this." Like, no. It's not about what we think we're going to do to win this game, or, "Oh, it's 0-0. We're really under pressure right now. We need to put this player in because she's a starter." No. The player who's been on the bench for a little bit needs to learn how is she going to act in this situation? Because if not, there's no development. So regardless, if we then lose a goal from that, right, we concede, there's no one's fault to blame but my own, because that was my decision as the coach. But I want that player to develop. So that's where those tough decisions have to come in. Just like I said to you with the state high school final, I knew what would happen, but it goes against my philosophy as a coach and as a person. Like, you have to have a good attitude. You have to respect your players. If you're not, I'm a man of my word. You're not going to be playing. You're not going to be starting. So to have these players on the field, again, you've got to move with the game, right? And I'm thinking, right, my centre mid, who's, let's say she's the top player of the team, the star, the rock. Well, she can't play every single minute. Maybe here's a good transition for us to take a 5-minute break. Let's put her in. Or look at the flow of the game. Are we getting a lot of possession on the left? Just lots of different things like that. But you always look at your bench thinking, okay, I've got three sitting there. When can I transition them into the game and why? But there has to be a purpose towards that. You know what I mean? It's not about, like, let me just stick her in because they're not attacking down the left. So let me just play her on the right because that's the safest option for me as a coach and as the team. That's not what we want to do. So does that answer your question?
Oh, it went beyond my question because that truly tells me you're more concerned about development than the W. As a parent, that is one of the questions I actually ask coaches. It's what do you do if my son, who has been bench for majority of the game and now needs to have his time to go play because A, maybe you forgot about him because the intensity of the game, because I have coached, I understand how that goes because you forget who's sitting next to you. And I was the person that had the clipboard and how many minutes every player was playing. And I would nudge the head coach, like, hey, we need to get this player in. He hasn't had minutes in a while. I mean, you're only talking 6 and 7 year olds at the time, but it was trying to divide the team, the time equally in the right moments. And he made the decision on when to sub him in, but I would be constantly reminding him, like, we need this player in to have his moment so he can learn. And I think you answered that. It's not so much about just subbing them on to sub them on. It's subbing them on in the right moment with a purpose. I think so many coaches just sub a player on because they have to sub someone on. Or a player is tired, but they don't know who to sub on. So they just grab someone and reshuffle their formation and send everyone back out. And I think that's what's missing a lot in our North Texas culture is parents understanding substitution versus starting. And you talked about it with your players. Like, they need to come to you. My son's 9. I say this in all my episodes. I feel like I'm a record, but I'm forcing my kid right now to go talk to his coach versus me. He's 9. Awesome. My son has a better conversation with adults than he does kids. I think that's a me as a parent issue, because that's how I was as a kid. And so it's teaching him when he has an issue, he has to go to his coach and not be scared to have the confrontation as a player, because it's really not a confrontation. It's just a lack of understanding from both parties somewhere along the line. And me as a parent, my job is to then go follow up with the coach, ask my player what was said. If I don't understand what he says, is to go ask the coach or stand close enough to the conversation where I'm eavesdropping on the conversation. So I know what's being said. So if I have a question, I can ask my son or I can ask the coach and to have a better understanding, because at the end of the day, it's if you truly care about development, it's just not the speed and the tactical and the mental development of the game. It is the growing and maturing of the game. I had this conversation with my mom today. It's like teaching kids soccer is a great avenue to learn personal life skills beyond the pitch. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if we start teaching these players to be responsible and true leaders, these players that we have at high levels, when they go leave the game, they have a skill set that might be ready for college, or if they go play in college, the coach can actually talk to them. And I think you're building that in a small environment right now, that you're building your foundation for the big picture with your players. How do you bring those messages to them then? Do you hold their feet somewhat to the fire to leave a little bit of information out so they are forced to talk to you, or do you have a conversation with them in the beginning of the season and hold the expectation? Or do you just a flat out approach them saying, like, what is going on? Like, let's talk.
Yeah, I mean, a bit of both, if I'm honest. We have so every 3 months we'll do player evaluations, player feedback. And then I'd say it's an ongoing process. So again, week to week. So like, even we have practice tonight. I know the 4 players that I'm going to quickly talk to, I use the warm-up as that individual time. Say, hey, how do you think you did? And watching the video back and how I saw it, is there anything you think you could have worked on? Or what did you do really well? And then we'll have that kind of one-on-one, depending on their mood, depending on what happened at school, you'll get that vibe from them. Sometimes they don't want to talk to you. And you're like, okay, just let them be. Let's see how they react during the practice. And then you might have a second chance to do it after the session. Maybe they've done something really well. That's where I'll know for example, these 4 players, one of them, we've been working on first touch and turning and not playing negatively back all the time to our center back. She did it really well on Saturday, so I know what I'm going to talk to her about today. Again, she'll probably do it more so in practice today. And again, it's just that praising that. This is what we're doing. This is why we're working on this. So I love it when girls, when any player questions me or why are we doing this? Love that. Why am I not getting enough playing time? Love that. Is there any way I can move from a center mid and try right mid on the weekend? 100%. Like, I love that, because it's that communication, that relationship that actually, especially in girls soccer, it builds that team to a different level. And once they start loving what they're doing, they're going to just thrive. And we're at that point where it's just going to slow process, but we're going to get exactly where we need to be. But I love it when players question everything, because at the end of the day, they're a player. I was a player. I still am a player. And we're always learning. And if you've got someone who can be there to teach you the fundamentals and the other things, especially off the field as well, you know, then you can go and have the freedom to do what you want to do. So like our team right now, they know what we're pushing towards. They know how we're playing. We changed our formation because it just wasn't working. Now they're thriving with that. But we have certain goals that we need to kind of meet. But they also have to take responsibility and express themselves on the field. And how do they do that? Well, it's about giving them the opportunity to say, hey, you haven't got any confidence to dribble down and beat that player because maybe they haven't been taught that way or coached that way. But it's just going to take time and patience and just giving them that understanding and that freedom to say, you can keep going, just keep going, keep going. And then eventually they'll be rewarded for it. So again, going back to your question, Ian, yeah, I think every player has to have that transparency with their coach. Because if not, like what we if a player's scared to come up to me and talk to me or ask about playing time, that's not on them, that's on me. I haven't given them that relationship or that back and forth to allow them to do that. So that is 100% off me if a kid doesn't feel that they can approach me. Definitely.
Now, are you tying that into the DNA of the club then? Because I feel like a lot of coaches will have, I don't know if you've seen this yet or experienced it yet in any of your experience. The team manager is the conduit between to the coach. You don't talk to the coach, you only talk to the team manager. And I as a parent, that's a red flag. If I can't go up and talk to my child's coach, it's not a coach for me because I feel like they're trying to hide something or pull one over on me. I don't know which one yet. But
I don't
as
think
a
for parents. I think parents like, oh, I want to say something. It's like the mum or dad, no, don't say something because little Timmy's not going to get enough playing time now. Like that's literally the culture that we live in. Whereas like we push toward a lot of team bonding stuff, right? And it's how the club's DNA, like you said, is going to be where we'll have a lunch. We lost 4-1 the other day, right? All went to lunch afterwards. We all talked about the game, parents, me, the girls. Brilliant time. Had some pizza, had some drinks, great little environment. If a parent can't ask me, oh, why did you decide to do this? Well, these are the reasons why. Okay. It's just a dialogue, right? Just like if you're watching professional sports on the TV, like you have to have that back and forth dialogue because, you know, it's my opinion at the end of the day. Even though it's educated opinion, it's still an opinion of what I saw and what I believe is right for this team right now. So if a coach, sorry, a player, a parent comes to me and sends me an email, can we talk? Absolutely. I've had that. I've had that this year, 100%.
I that's the thing. I feel like so many parents are scared to approach the coach or scared because, like you said, the playing time, or I'm scared with my podcast even. It could hinder my child, my both either one of my children, soccer future, because I may say something that someone might not like, and it might affect their chances of playing for a club or a team. But at the end of the day, like you said, their opinions, everyone, my joke is everyone has one. Some are good, some are bad, some smell. I mean, it's just a matter of trying to understand. And the more I've done this, the more I've realized the coaches that are more open and willing to have the team bonding experiences and make it part of the DNA are the teams that are some of the most successful teams in the Metroplex. Juan talked about it with his girls that he had. And it's like they, outside of soccer, he had most of them from a very young age, 6, 7 years old, all the way to now they're in college playing. And he goes, they called me Poppy Juan, or whatever it may be. It wasn't just Coach Juan. He goes, I was Coach Juan on the pitch. Then once we walked off that pitch, we were laughing, giggling, and having a good time. And I think that's what parents are so don't understand. Like, there is two sides of every coach. There are coaches that are like that, and there are coaches that are all business. And it's a matter of how to handle those circumstances. I feel like I know what type of coach my son needs to grow, and having that dialogue between two adults to have an understanding. And like we had a talk with my son's coach, and it's like, how can we help you with his school behavior? Because he had an issue with school, and it's how do we help him here on the pitch so he can have a better attitude at school? It's like that is the initiative that I think coaches need to have, because soccer is the end all be all for my child. And if the coach is willing to take that just as a parent, that warmed me on the inside to hear. How do you recognize your players? I've seen on your social media that your kits are phenomenal. They have their own names on them. They have they're personalized to a degree. How do you recognize players that are on your squad when they do something great? I mean, you can verbally praise them, but do you make an announcement like as a team during the week, like you have a player of the match? Do you guys do something to make players feel validated that they are improving or doing something well off on the pitch? And do you do anything for them off the pitch with when it comes to academics or service outside of the community or things along that line?
So yeah, I mean, as we're growing, we're kind of putting, especially my fiance Kaylee, right? She's a mom of two boys, so it's kind of implementing that part of the structure too. So with our girls right now, I mean, there's always praise from a coaching point of view. The things off the pitch, like happy birthdays, we do like social media messages. I always bring a balloon and a cupcake. I've actually got two this weekend. So we bring that to practice. We'll always sit down in a circle after practice, have some cupcakes, and sing happy birthday. We do player of the game on social media with their jersey on the, their name on the back. And then most of it is done via the video analysis too. Some of it's public on YouTube, but some of it's private. And I'll do a voiceover of the analysis that I created. And I think I did one last week, and it focused on just the positives of playing our triangle patterns and how it works so well compared to 2, 3 months ago. And I put their names up and I talk, I verbally call them out. So look what, Harper did brilliantly here. And again, it's just giving them that praise at practice and telling them when they do need a kick in the butt. Like it's just, again, I'd expect the same thing from them. I always tell them in practice, if the ball, you and the ball's there to be won, you hit me. They actually get a gift card. If they win a ball off me and put me on the floor, they get a Starbucks gift card. So think, because I'm always playing with them at practice, I have to be involved. I think if you can physically be involved as a coach, I think that should be mandatory. It's one thing that we'll always have at the club. If you're a coach here, you will be playing and participating at practice. You won't just be standing there. You have to be involved. You have to show, what you're trying to educate the players. So, but yeah, it's all about the kid, mate. It's all about making them feel excited. Like I don't take it lightly when they put on a BSC jacket and the parents order their spirit gear. Watching that, like it's like humbling. It makes you feel good because they're pushing the same thing you're pushing. They want their kid to thrive. They want their kid to be happy, and they want it to be a great environment. And the rest will take care of itself. And our group right now, we have like it's like 16, right? And they're not fully bonded. It's still taking time. It's high school girls. Like it's just it is what it is, and you just have to try and keep building that positivity, keep making sure they have love and respect for each other, and it'll just grow over time. So it's honestly, mate, it's been brilliant. I couldn't have asked for a greater group to start the club, and I made sure they were aware of that. The players that I'm very fortunate of why they're here and what they believe in as well. So yeah, it's all about them, mate.
So now you're since these are high school girls, are you building a pathway program to move to the next stages for college? Do you have connections in those environments? Because I feel like most coaches can say things, but there's nothing there to back it up. I know that Cross City has direct connection with Mexico. Juan has connections with coaches all over the country and colleges and national team stuff. Do you guys have anything like that? Or
Own a college recruitment franchise. That was kind of what I did. That was actually my full-time role about, oh, I want to say 7, 8 years ago. And it hasn't really changed, if I'm honest. So I've got connections all over the country. Still in contact with a lot of coaches, but I think the pathway is, again, it's step by step. So this year we'll get there this year under their belt, and then second year, we're going to start educating and bringing the kids out, almost like in a classroom structure. And I have a 12 list process of, sorry, yeah, 12 bullet point list process that will happen in the year, going from, NAIA and NCAA clearing houses, what the parents need to do, Do they need a resume? What does it look like? How do we turn their analysis videos into a 5 to 7 minute clip? What are coaches looking at for that 5 to 7 clip? They're only looking at the first. I used to do it for my college coach in Montana. My job as an older captain there was to gather, it was like five, every year, 500, 600 videos. And my job was to watch them. But I'd only watch the first 30 seconds because you can tell straight away if that player has it or hasn't got it, depending on the video. And then the players that didn't have video, we'd say, we need a video, that type of thing. So I've been well versed in that over the years. And there's a lot of stigma attached to college recruitment. A lot of, well, I need to be on this team to get into this college, or I need to do this to get into this. College coaches don't care. They don't care about that. They care about what you like as a player and what you like as a person. And if you can just kind of be in front of them at the right times with the right material, and they fit you, you'll get that opportunity. But again, it's again the stigma trying to educate players. If you don't play for this club's ECNL, they're not looking at that on your CV. They're looking at you as a player in the video. Then they'll go down to that. That probably, if they like you as in the video, right? They look at your GPA, your hobbies. Then they're, oh, he played for, or he or she played for BSC Texas. They don't care. They just care about you. They don't care what club you played for. So it's again educating our parents through the process of that. We're going to start that next year with the girls. Depending on next year, if we have maybe an older boys team or a girls team, then we'll do that straight away with them. But a nice, easy, organized process for them that's included with the club where they can just get educated. Here's your tools, here's your packet. This is what we need to do in the next 3 months. And then we'll obviously the goal for the players that do want to become college players. Well, in an ideal world, we'll sit together. They've got three or four offers. Well, let's talk about these. Like, what does this benefit you? How does this benefit you? And me being there just to help them through that process. So I'm fortunate that I did go down that route for a few years, and it was fascinating. The big business that is college soccer and college sport. I mean, I'm fortunate for it because obviously we don't have that back home in England. So when I did come to Montana and play college soccer, I was blown away that someone was paying me to play and get my education done. So, I mean, yeah, it was pretty crazy.
And that's the thing. I think parents are so set on, and that's a topic we can discuss if you want. It's, I want to play for only a D1. That's what you, I'm constantly reading. Like, it's at a school that can get you your education, the degree that you want. And if you can go play soccer, great. I think that's the thing. I think so many things are, I only want to play for a D1 school in California or New York, wherever it may be, or Texas. I think parents are hung up on that. Players get hung up on that. And I don't think they understand what a D1 means, or a D2 or a D3. At the end of the day, the education, it's going to be about the same, other than the name that you graduate with. That's just my opinion, but
I'm
I.
again, especially with social media, and it's the same as ECNL, MLS Next, and that type of thing. Like, there's a time and a place for it for those type of players, but I think parents and kids just get, I don't want to say brainwashed, but almost they're just not educated enough to take themselves out of this environment and put themselves in the environment of what does my player actually want to do? And like, I was in an NAIA, right? So a little bit different to D1, D2, D3 college. It's its own entity. But we would fly to California and play D1 schools, and we beat them or we compete with them. It didn't matter. Like, again, that mentality of D1, D2, D3, like, why? Because you see them on ESPN, but that's a different level. Like, it doesn't mean that you have to make it there or you're a failure if you don't. Like, what's
Right.
your degree? What do you want to go into, microbiology? Well, there's only certain select colleges that have that and offer soccer at the same time. So let's narrow those down. That's what you want to pursue. So let's try and make the best of everything there. Do you want to go into a business degree? Well, okay, you've got pretty much every college that's going to offer that, and you can play soccer. But again, it's about educating them on, it's not about the college and the D1 level. It's what's a good fit for you and your family, like at the end of the day. And for me as a coach, to watch a kid thrive in a college, like I had it when I was coaching in Oregon, right? We developed kids to play in college. So we would take our younger kids down to then watch the kids that we'd helped develop into college. And it was such an amazing experience. And we actually organized a dorm room night. So we slept over in the bunks. It was like, you know, pre-season, so there was no one there. We woke up and they got to experience what a day in the life of a college player was. And it's those are the big goals and aspirations for BSC, where we can develop those players, get them to where they want to be, and then watch them progress throughout their collegiate careers. So it's such a, I think, a great thing if it's done the right way and it's done with the best intentions of the kid and the family, not just I want to play at Duke because they're on ESPN Plus and HD tonight. Yeah.
And so that leads me to the next part. So do you have a working relationship with any pros or semi-pro teams, even in the Metroplex? I mean, we have so many, as I've learned, semi-pro teams here in the Metroplex, even for boy, men and women, however you say it correctly. There's such a huge organization there that I think parents don't realize they're there. They can go play for a semi-pro team here in the Metroplex and still go to college here, and they still get their soccer why going to school. It's just figuring out how to plan it all around it. Or are you working on those connections?
Yeah, I think, again, I never want to get ahead of myself. It's, to me, it's about the fundamentals of the team and the club right now, but connecting like with people like yourself, Ian, and just kind of having that slow, patient progress. Like, I'm all about energy and how it works organically. If it's meant to happen, it's meant to happen. And I've met some great people here, and it's kind of leading you to different, you know, teams or different organizations, and it's awesome. So I'm just patient with that. It will come. I don't see a rush for it right now. And, you know, it's one of those things that I think will just come in time. And the more that we can kind of be part of in the local community, the better. I mean, at the end of the day, it's football. Like, it's an amazing sport. It's just football. Like, you've got to enjoy it. And it's great here. It really is. But it's just about kind of, you know, trying to make sure it's above board and people are enjoying themselves, I think.
Now, I'm going to go back to what you talked about in the very beginning, because I want a better understanding what your Edge Fridays is. You talked about that. You can do holistic stuff. You talk about nutrition, things along that line. What else is part of that? Is it like a skills night also, or is it just like a classroom setting?
So it's both. So let's say I'll go back to the Friday we just had, right? So Katie worked with the girls with band work, and the focus of last Friday was all about their hips and their hamstrings. These kids don't stretch. It's too boring for them. They don't eat the right things. They think a Powerade's healthy. It's just those things that we're not like pushing. We're just educating them on it. You know, after a game, a can of Coca-Cola, should you be having that? Absolutely not. But this is an alternative to that. So on Friday, we were doing band work, working on their hamstrings. Very common in women's sports, you know, especially their ACLs, MCLs, their hamstring work. A lot of injuries come from those. And we were working on how the hips were moving. So we were having them up against each other with the bands. We were doing hamstring work, glute work. So Kaylee would take the girls doing that for half the session, whilst I take the girls, the other set of girls, and we'll work on anything kind of tailored towards what they want to work on individually, and we'll just kind of compile it. So let's say I had a centre back and I had a forward. I would tailor that half an hour towards them. How are we opening up? What's my defender doing? What's the shape like? It's almost like a private session that I would do for the academy, but, you know, tailored towards the girls that I have a relationship with, and I know what they need, but also what do they need? I might have, like this week that went past, we had two centre backs come and they wanted to work on their shooting. I loved that. So we just started whipping balls into the top corner. We would work how a forward would work. And it also gave them a good understanding of, oh, this is how a forward would want to touch the ball away from me as a centre back. So it kind of, you know, it's from a different perspective. Then after that, we'll switch them. And then that group will go with Kaylee. I'll stick with the players. And then they usually have a one-on-one time with Kaylee if they have any girl issues I wouldn't be part of. Any questions from a female point of view, she'll talk to them about that. And then off they go for the weekend. So it's one of those, we're building as we go with that. We're working, I think, for the girls, it's they're not used to that. So they're, you know, very timid at the moment, especially talking about anything that's relatable to maybe their problems in school right now, boy trouble, whatever it is. It's something that they're going to kind of warm up with. Just something that's, I think, is needed, especially with the stresses of what they're going through now in life. It just gives them an opportunity to just be more relaxed about it. And, you know, it's not all serious all the time and that type of thing. So who knows where we'll grow it to. I have ideas about it, especially with our like partnerships now with like Stretch Zone, having the kids go down there as a group, figuring out, you know, why it's so important to look after yourselves and to take it a little bit more seriously. I've always been the type of player that despised stretching, hated it, but I got injured quite a bit and that was the reasons why. So as I got older, I knew how important it was, and it's just trying to educate them on that. And they can do things at home that will help them. Like we'll send them videos of like maybe a 20 minute morning stretch before a game. If you want to do this today, you can do it, that type of thing. So just kind of creating that different.
I like it. Now, do you have partnerships? You said United, Steel United, you have a partnership. Do you work with any other clubs in the Metroplex, or is that just the main one?
I just get along with the DOC, Adam. We have three organizations that we're partnered with: Stretch Zone, Team Player, with Alan, the gentleman that you interviewed, such a good guy. And then a young lad who has a local business called Cade's Wildlife. So yeah, it's just kind of, we want to be in line with those type of organizations that see, you know, see things how we see it and how we can help each other in the community and kind of keep growing together, you know?
I like that. One more question I had. Do you guys, your leagues that you guys play in, I meant to ask this when you were talking about Classic earlier. Do you guys are playing only playing Classic, or do you guys play in multiple leagues at the current time, or one league at a time until you guys get your foundation built, then add more games into the equation?
We're doing Classic League right now. I mean, it's more than enough for what they're doing. We do tournaments as well. We've got two coming, well, one coming up in November, potentially another one in December. But again, you have some teams that want to do everything all the time, but you have other teams that just want to kind of take their time with it and see how it kind of grows. Like we've got a lot of girls that were going to quit club soccer. They had that mentality. They didn't want to be part of club soccer anymore. They got burnt out for the teams or the coaches. So, you know, you've got to take that on board as well, making sure they're in an environment that they can do their other hobbies. And another big thing on that, Ian, is coaches that don't allow their players to play high school soccer as well. I can't fathom how that's a thing. It's madness. Like high school soccer is such a different experience to club soccer, and it's such a healthy one that I just can't. I can't. Other that's maybe that's for another day, but. So yeah, it's just, yeah, we're just playing Classic League right now, mate, and some tournaments. We'll just keep building and growing together. And I think we're right where we need to be in terms of what's kind of laid out. Yeah, like I said, we'll kind of take the next steps when we need to. But there's no rush at all.
I like that. I think that's the key. I think some families, I mean, my son would play in five games every weekend if we would allow him to. Our biggest fear is burnout, or injury.
Yeah.
It's a lot of soccer in a weekend. I don't know where this mentality we have came from, that we have to play 15 games every weekend. And when you go to the rest of the world, they're lucky to play one game every weekend. And then it's just street ball with their friends. But I think that's a whole nother conversation for another day, because that's a spread out issue, not so much a culture issue than a kid issue. But one, two games a weekend, I think, is a lot. I mean, most big tournaments, when you talk to parents that have kids that are taking soccer very serious, They wish they would spread tournaments over 2 weekends instead of 1 weekend where they play six games, possibly, and just to reduce the number of injuries. But it's cramming everything as quickly as possible and as much as possible. You talked about your time with college. Now, recruiting, so somewhat watching videos. Is there any advice you'd give families as a coach because of that, because of your experience? You said you have it part of your program, but when you're working with these families, or do you do that as a, what's the word I'm looking for? You said it's part of the program that you're getting ready for it for next year because it is a hard topic. How do you plan on implementing that? Do you just are doing a create a formula for them and have them like, here's your information. You touched on it, and I'm trying to I wrote down my notes. My notes, I don't have enough down to remember word for word. Are you planning on?
It's basically a guide that's I guess tailored over my years' experience of what they need to work on from the certain age to senior year, right? So what are the fundamentals? What have they got to do now? What have they got to look for? And it's just a step by step. So for example, next year, maybe September comes along, we'll have an hour and a half class together. We'll record it for parents who can't make it. And then I'll have access to that. And it has to be step by step because it will become overwhelming for them. So, for example, one and two, it's okay, we're going to work on our clearing house. We're going to work on our GPA. And what's the meaning behind the GPA, right? So, I'm going to give an example. I had a player back in the day. She was on a 3.4. She got a $9,000 scholarship offer, nothing for academics. But if they said to her, if you get up to a 3.5 next year or next month, we'll give you another 9,000. So it's that importance too of just educating the kids and the parents, like you have to work hard in school and here's the other reasons why behind it. And it's just giving them a it's taken the stress away from something that's pretty straightforward and simple, but it's been taken into this like overwhelming experience for parents. Like, how do we get there? How do we start? Do we have to hire professionals to do it? Who does it for us? Whereas it's if we do it together as a group, and here's our structure, here's some templates, like email templates, where it doesn't come from the parent, it's the player's responsibility. And how can they tailor that template to the specific college that they're applying for? For example, template one, write it up. It might take an hour. Well, they'll have that template now for the next couple of years. And then they'll have three things. And that's what I would recommend for everyone is to have three bullet points on that specific school. So the template isn't looking like a template. So for example, I love UCLA and I've noticed that point one, your roster last year had nine seniors. So I know you're going to have an influx of freshmen. I love the fact that you guys play at this facility, and I love your campus because of this. So it's three, they've gone on the website, they've done about 10, 15 minutes of research, and they've shown some excitement and responsibility of taking that initiative. And then the rest will follow, i.e., here's a link to my video. And then the video is a whole nother thing where I always recommend short and sweet, 5 to 7 minutes. The first 30 to seconds to a minute is the most vital part. So if you're a center back, for example, and you have a 7 minute clip, well, that first 30 minutes to a minute has to showcase what can you do. Maybe one amazing tackle, one great header, one great over the top through ball. How are you quickly on the ball and spreading the play out wide? Are you calm? And then the rest is just like your highlights. And then once that's kind of you're in. And then it will be like, right, can you send me some extended video now? And then they want to see where do you screw up? Like, where's your weaknesses as well? And then they'll maybe ask for your development over the course of 2 years. How were you 2 years ago? Do you have any video on that? Yeah, we do. So they can see the progression. They can see, is this player coachable enough? Or, yeah, you can see that progression, which means they're coachable enough. This is the type of player that we want during our for our roster. So it's a long process, but if you put the bullet points in place, it's pretty straightforward. It's just putting the tools in front of the parents to give them that that kind of experience to think, all right, I'm not overwhelmed anymore. I know what I'm doing. I'm not missing a step. You know what I mean?
I love it. I'm going to ask you my last question, and it's my favorite question because I feel like it shows who the people I'm interviewing are. Who has been your greatest influence, first as a player, because that's where you started to fall in love with the game, and now as a coach? It can be the same people. It doesn't have to be. It could be anyone. It could be parents, family. It could be coaches, players.
But I mean, first right off the bat would be my dad. My dad was a very highly talented left-footed player. And I used to watch him playing on a Saturday growing up. He was on the books at Chelsea at one point, but it was back in the day enough where it wasn't like it is now, where you're like, oh, I'm a pro for Chelsea. It was more of like, he had to decide between being an architect. He just started an architectural firm, or get a contract signed by Chelsea. And his dad advised him to do the family route, be nice and sensible. But I got to watch him play, and he was such a, what I loved about him as a player, which I took on as a player, was the way he was on the field with his teammates. He was always hard when he needed to be, but soft when he needed to be, but he always showed his leadership through his playing. And that's what I always try and teach myself, especially going through the ranks as a young lad. You can be an overexcited leader, or a shouter, or a talker, or you could lead by playing to a high consistent level, right? So I learned so much from him. He used to take me down the park a lot. And yeah, he was the guy that stood out for me and pushed me to be where I was. And when I got the opportunity to play in America when I was 21, I didn't have any money at the time at all. And I've never been that kid who asks for money from parents, or like, that's just one of my things, right? So I said to him, I need to go down this route from UK to America. I had to pay this kind of clearinghouse fee. I think it was about $1,500 or whatever. And he pushed me to do it, and he gave me the money. And he said to me, I said, why are you doing that? He's like, invest in the things you believe in. And it always stood out to me that I actually got that tattooed on my arm. And so he was kind of instrumental in everything I've done as a kid until now. And from a coaching point of view, I think if you take away, I guess, the Klopps, the Peps of this generation, it'd have to be Sir Alex. He was just, what he did for United, what he did for, I think, that generation, and how he was as a manager. I think that always stood out to me, definitely as a coach, because he had that respect about him from his players. But he also had that side where they could talk to him. If you see any of the documentaries, the players that had a relationship with him, they could talk to him one-on-one. They could go and sit in his office. I think it was Roy Keane. I know him and Roy Keane fell out, but I think it was Keane who said that they went for a glass of wine and kind of chatted about life. And that's the type of thing, I think, that goes above and beyond just being a coach, right? It's having that relationship and that passion to actually love what you do and the players that you're surrounded with. So, yeah, I think that they're the two gents that I would pick.
Hey, everyone. I hope you guys have enjoyed this episode of Chat by the Pitch. This week with Coach Nick, and the previous week with him, wrapping up our interview, re-listening to all these two episodes several times now, I'm growing to appreciate his no-contract mentality. By doing that, it forces him and his hand to create the ultimate product to truly care and develop players that are able to come to him, that are able to have things to grow with, not just on the pitch, but off the pitch. Concerns, the reality of this beautiful game is more than just what happens in 90 minutes or 60 minutes or whatever it may be, 40 minutes of a match. It really comes down to what's going on with our players on and off the pitch. Nick has a great approach to this for his club, and I'm hoping he's able to continue doing this and continue growing this program that he's creating and creating a love and foster for this beautiful game that we all enjoy. Hey everyone, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.